All right. I am recording.
Brooklyn is rolling.
Oh, I'm not. Hang on.
Come on, Jeff.
Ah, Burbank.
Put down the pizza.
Burbank is rolling.
All right, you're recording?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he just said.
Well, it's fun. Make sure.
Okay.
He's got pizzle-addled brain. I don't know.
No, I meant I'm rolling around.
Yeah, that's exactly.
In my new jazzy scooter.
All right, here we go.
It's a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Quiet!
Wait! Stop. I have to tell you this. I had this dream last night. So I'm sleeping, and I'm having this dream, and in the dream, I come up with a great idea for a new TV show. I mean, a hit TV show. And the weird thing is, I wake up, and I still think it's a great idea. You want to hear about it? Okay, I'll tell you about it. It's called Bus Station.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 89 for the week of September 28th, 2015. I am Pile of Leaves David T. Cole, and I'm here with New Boots Sarah D. Bunting.
Anybody got a Band-Aid or three?
Pumpkin Latte Spice Tara Arellano.
If you want to be my lover, gotta get with Nutmeg.
And premature Christmas decoration, Jeff Drake.
Fuck you, Halloween and Thanksgiving. Christmas is in the house.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We'll get to the show in a moment, but I want to warn everybody here at Hawaii HQ, there might be some jackhammering today.
Literally.
Yeah. Part of our driveway is being ripped up. So you might hear... what's going to happen is somebody's going to ring the bell to let them know we're here.
Gordon
Lightfoot,
bark.
Our dog, is going to woof, 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 woof at him from inside. I will have to go out and let him in. And then sometime after that, jackhammering may start. Now, it is my great hope that the jackhammering will start after we have finished recording. But, you know.
Maybe they'll come on Hawaii time.
Yeah. So let's welcome our guest this week, Jeff Drake. Hello, Jeff.
Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. So today we are going to talk about fall TV in the manner in which we usually do on Extra Hot Great, which is we're going to talk about the show we're most into, the show we should be into, but somehow are not.
This also may encompass shows we used to be into, but are not into anymore.
New and reoccurring shows.
Correct.
The show nobody should be into.
Yep.
And then we're going to wrap it up with some honorable mentions.
Yeah.
All right. So... with that in mind, who shall start? We're going to go east to west, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
That
so
means
Sarah.
Yes.
The show I am most into is, well, I hesitate to use this one because I'm not sure it really counts, but I know that our valued guest is going to agree with me. It's the show, Major League Baseball.
No.
Excited.
Yeah.
Pretty excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My team just clinched for the first time in 10 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Actual show that I'm most into is Project Greenlight. It's so maddeningly amazing right now.
Oh, God. Hello? I was screaming at it last night.
Did we just lose Sarah?
I think we did.
No, I'm here.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
That was
I'm
very
waiting
abrupt.
For everyone to shit on Jason Mann.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, Jason Mann is the worst. He's the worst person alive. I could not believe it as we record this on Monday, last night's episode, when they showed him all of the houses that they were proposing as the location for his fucking movie, which all his only requirement was that it look old and like rich people live there, which all of them did. Like, I don't know where he thinks he's going to find a 200-year-old house in Los Angeles, except he doesn't think he's going to find a 200-year-old house in Los Angeles, and this is his baby way of getting his baby way, and I fucking hate him! I hate him!
And it works, too. And it's like, he knows what he wants is East Coast light.
Right.
Which you won't get. Like, the Hearst Mansion is beautiful, but if you want that sort of weak, watery, wintry light, yeah. LA ain't got that.
No.
Which is fine. But what he wants is to go to Connecticut and film there among his lurchly people, I guess. I don't know. But I mean, he was obviously picked because he is that guy. Capital
yes.
T, capital FG.
For sure.
But brilliant choice. Love it. So watchable.
All right. Jeff.
It's up to me now.
Yep.
The thing that I'm most excited about, which I'm kind of surprised by from the initial stuff that I saw, but then I started hearing really good things from my wife, who watched it through some special link at work weeks ago with everybody at work, which is The Grindr.
Oh, that's mine too.
Oh my God. Oh my God, with this show. And I mean, Tara can jump in on this. Like, it is really, I mean, it is really honestly like one of like the funniest pilots I've seen in a long time.
It was really good. Yeah, we watched it on the weekend. I agree. It did not have a lot of the pilot-y deficits that pilots tend to have, I thought.
No. And that was the great thing is like so much of it. Well, you can get away with a lot of it because you know, Rob Lowe's character is such a, like, he's so full of exposition anyway, just because, you know, it's just like the nature of his character to kind of like just sort of state things as they are. But like, it just really had such a light touch with everything. And there were just so many like surprisingly funny moments. Fred Savage is great in it. And William Devane is amazing. Like, it's just, the cast is just so strong. And it's just terrific. It's just like, I'm really looking forward to watching. I'm surprised that Fox has suddenly become good at scripted at live action scripted comedies.
Yeah.
Because for like years up until just a couple of years ago, everything they did failed.
Yeah.
You know, and then even stuff that people kind of liked, like what was it? Raising Hope, was that
yeah.
what
yeah.
it's called? I never got behind that one, but so many people liked it. But it's like, it was like, it's not catching on because people don't expect Fox to do well with that stuff. But now with like Last Man on Earth and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and it's just like, this is going to fit right in with it. It's really Rob Lowe is just delightful.
Oh God, he's so funny. So for those who haven't seen the promo 7,000 times because they were rewatching all of Brooklyn Nine-Nine on demand like some people were, hello. The premise is Fred Savage is a lawyer. Rob Lowe is his older brother who's just wrapped either seven or eight, a large number of seasons on a legal drama called The Grindr. And so he's sort of at loose ends. He comes back to his hometown in Idaho and, you know, is trying to figure out what he should do next and decides he's going to be a fake lawyer, basically.
Yeah.
he wants all the trappings of lawyering he talks about taking the bar, even though he hasn't been to law school. And their father, who I feel like they must have established in it that he was a lawyer also, like that they're a family of lawyers, maybe. William Devane is their dad.
Yeah.
And so it's all about how the Fred Savage character sucks in court because he gets way too nervous. And Rob Lowe is really smooth, but he doesn't actually know anything. And yeah. The Fred Savage, as some might know, he's been behind the camera on a lot of really great shows. Best Friends Forever, which was in the canon last week. He's directed a bunch of happy endings and has been a producer on a bunch of shows. So his comedy chops are like legit. That was what made me most hopeful about this show is that I thought he's got good taste. He's not going to be on a show that sucks. And it was true. It's very good. And then the pilot also has alt comedy superstars, including Mary Elizabeth Ellis and Kumail Nanjiani and Brian Husky. And they're all great. And it is great. You should watch it.
And we have an interview on previously.tv with Fred Savage done by our own Leanne Bonin Starr.
Correct.
Bonin?
I think Bonin.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yes.
It's a fun read. Check it out.
As a backup, since Jeff and I shared one, I will say I also really liked Limitless, although I'm sort of reserving judgment after the first episode. I would say the first like 7/8 of it were really cool. And then it got to the point where it's like, and now I'm going to be an FBI consultant with this doer boring lady. And then it's like, oh, it's every other CBS show.
I was going to say, now I'm going to turn this show into a CBS show.
Now it's, well, not just any.
Just
like,
CBS?
Right.
It's everybody like, has that show.
It's like Elementary. It's like Intelligence. It's like, I know I'm the only one that remembers Intelligence even, but it's like, it's the same thing. So
the thing about that show is that it seemed like it was going to be super terrible and it ended up being okay. And I think it's the disparity of expectations that you're responding to, not necessarily the, you know, isolated quality of the show.
Dave makes an excellent point. We watched it the night after.
Because it was
okay. It was better than, you're right.
It was only better than I thought. Yeah.
But having watched it the night after we watched the Minority Report pilot, I have gone on to watch the second episode and it is also super boring and terrible. Maybe Limitless also benefited from the glow of that as well.
Yeah. And does it overcome the horribleness of Jennifer Carpenter, who
in my opinion, no. Sarah watched it. She's the person. Sarah is the one Jennifer Carpenter fan in America. So
what?
Yeah, I know, right?
Sarah, go ahead. You also watched
that
it.
That was the week our downloads plummeted to 12. Sorry, guys. Yeah, I don't mind her. I don't know why. My brother and I have fought about this many times. He used to recap Dexter for Television Without Pity. And oh my God. I mean, and he hated everything about that after recapping, I believe, 12 episodes in 10 days.
Well, that would do it. All right, moving on. Hawaii 2, David T. Cole.
I already talked about the one I'm most into, which is Fargo, which hasn't started yet. But
right.
Go back 2 episodes, I think, maybe, to hear some non-spoilery thoughts about that. Really enjoyed that. But just in the interest of having something new to say, I was surprisingly really into Scream Queens.
Oh, yeah. I was not expecting that reaction from you at all.
I wasn't either.
It's sort of like the perfect synthesis of like Mean Girls, Bring It On, and Scream.
Yes.
And I know it got low ratings, but I kind of hope that it can just like survive, you know, sort of as a cult in the moment cult TV show, because if they can keep that quality up, it was really funny and it was really good. It's a much better Scream than the TV show Scream is. That's for sure.
Yeah. Actually, Eve Beatty, who covered Scream for us for a while until people stopped caring, said the same thing, that she was that Scream Queens is what she was hoping Scream would be. And as usual, opinions of the internet do not line up with ratings at all, because our Alex Idell's first post on the episode was the second most popular post on previously.tv last week. So,
yeah. All right. So let's move on to show we should be into, but are not.
Sarah.
So I haven't quit this yet, but it's only got a couple more episodes and then I'm quitting because the danger signs started in like April of last year, The Mindy Project.
Oh,
really verging into like all the sort of sitcom-y stuff that like now and then it would do, but I didn't mind. Now there's like proportionally more of that, it seems to me. And she is like, she was never that like, I don't know, root forable character to me. And she's becoming progressively less like relatable. I don't know what it is exactly, but it's getting much more sitcom-y and rom-com-y in ways that I don't like.
Yeah.
And the sort of like daffy humor that, I mean, whenever Morgan is on screen, then I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't so bad, but he can't be the whole show. So
alas.
Yeah, so I think I'm almost done. I've stuck with it for a long time. I've given it a lot of chances. It has been very good, but I mean, the minute she got pregnant, I was like, this could be a problem, and it is the exact problem that I thought it would be. So unless they park the kid off screen, I'm out.
Also, they got rid of your beloved Adam Pally, or he excused himself, and that can't help for you
either. Yeah, and I remember I did write a piece on his departure, and I was like, you know, so long, thanks for all the horrible like NC-17 skeleton fucking humor. And also, did he see something that we didn't see yet? Because that was my concern, that either he was going to cause it to go downhill, or his departure was an effect of his seeing it go downhill. Yeah. I'm sure that's not true, but
yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair cop. Jeff,
where are you in your feelings about
I am still into it for Morgan, like you are. The rest of it, I can take or leave. I've been interested to sort of see if I can tell a difference now that it's on Hulu in terms of like how many people are in each episode, because that has been a problem for me with the show historically. Like, there's too many people and they don't know what to do with everybody. Like, seeing Ed Weeks, in fact, on Brooklyn on Project Greenlight this week made me realize, like, why would they even bother to try and lock him up? He's barely in the show.
I know. I was like, I really don't think that's going to be
that much.
I mean, they
issue.
Also called it like a hugely successful sitcom, and I was like,
it is interesting.
Is
the
that
cast,
what that is?
The cast seems to be, you know, on paper like a office comedy, but it's not that kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they needed to go one way or the other with expectations and the number of people in the show, because it seems like it could be a news radio-esque endeavor.
Yeah,
if you look at, you know, the setting and the number of people, but really it's more.
And when it's doing that, it's at its funniest.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff.
Me. So I was. I'm kind of. I have two categories of this one. One is a new show that I thought I would be interested in. Mm-hmm. That I turned off. That I just like. I literally was like, What is even happening?
Jeff,
I don't
that was,
even.
That was the news.
Which, oh, the news.
Yeah, that was Donald
These
Trump.
Are real things that are
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, he actually is running for president.
Oh, dear. And which was The Bastard Executioner.
Oh, that's my pick, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I just, like, I literally, I don't have anything to say about it. Because yeah. I'm like, I don't know how far I got into it. Did I get 5 minutes into
oh,
it?
Oh, my
did
God,
I get,
me too.
Did I get 25 minutes
nope.
into it? I don't know. I don't know what, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what it is in the same way that I don't know what the Muppets is. Like, you know, it's just like, to me, I'm like, I mean, I see that it's a TV show, but what?
Yeah.
The other one is, and it's not that I dislike it or anything, or I'm like, oh, this is preposterous, or that there's something that bugs me about it. It's just, for whatever reason, I can't finish Mr. Robot.
Hmm.
And I love the main guy, and there's a lot of it I like, and nothing is ever like, ugh, that? Like, I'm never having that reaction, but yet I look up and there's like, I've got 6 episodes on that? it's like surprising to me. And then we're like, what do we want to watch tonight? Do we want to watch Mr. Robot? And we're like,
can I tell you where that show almost lost me? I mean, I stuck with it, and I watched it to the end.
Uh-huh.
But there's an episode – like almost in the middle, and they look like they're gonna enact their, you know, their grand, you know, plan, and then yeah. the Chinese back out or something like that, and it basically resets yes. that whole thing. That was such like took the wind out of the sails of that show for me, and then they kind of slowly built up again, and it was just like, well, you didn't really need to do that. Like that was sort of like that smelt of. Oh, I got 6 episodes of plot, and I got spread it out over 10 or whatever, you know, the season was. And I thought that was a big mistake for that show, especially in the first season, especially being, at least for USA, a high concept, you know, TV show. I think that almost killed it for me. So I can understand that.
That's exactly what happened to Zoo. So.
Oh, I know. Remember Zoo, guys?
Oh, man, come on.
Dave, do you want to go next since yours was already mentioned?
Yeah. I'll just, on the topic of Bastard Executioner, you know, it looked like it had, you know, gruesome violence, you know, which is fine. It's great. You know, you kind of Games of Thrones, you know, axe in the head kind of stuff. You know, I wasn't into Sons of Anarchy at all, like 0% interest in this. So I was coming into it, you know, as like for the subject matter alone. And I am half Welsh. And the show takes place in Wales, and it's all about the Welsh folk. Even that, nope, don't care. there is something about the way this guy makes shows that is immediately off-putting to me. Like, it's, I don't know what it is. It's like it's like if one of the guys from Entourage actually did make a real TV show.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, and, my God.
Yeah, and so, like, everything about that is no to me. So, yeah, was not into it at all.
Well, it's like that weird thing where it kind of starts off with like essentially like what is this, like a fantasy, a dream, a what, like where you, like you start off like go for so long like not getting your feet under you that by the time they try to like put the ground under you, it's like I don't even know where I am.
Yeah.
Like quite honestly, like why don't you start with some sort of big action set piece to get me involved instead of a bunch of like mumbo jumbo?
And furthermore, nobody's actually proven for sure that Wales is real. So.
All right, I will finish up this chunk. I have an oldie and a newie for this one. My oldie is Scandal. After the last season finale, I was like, I don't need to watch this anymore. And nothing that I've heard about the premiere has made me think that was wrong. I just feel like this is a show that could have burned so much brighter if it had been shorter seasons or, you know, if it had been reined in more. But like the Liv Fitz love story, like, does not work for me, is not a good story. And both of them kind of suck. So if that's what we're all watching for, no. My newie is the CBS sitcom Life in Pieces, which on paper might be something that I would enjoy. It's a big, like, sprawling family comedy in the Arrested Development vein, I guess. There are a couple of people in it that I like: Colin Hanks, Zoe Lister-Jones, Diane Wiest, and Betsy Brandt and Dan Bacadal. But where I almost bailed out of the pilot was the premise of the show is that you follow four different storylines in an episode. So it's like each act is its own completely discrete chunk. And the second one was about the Colin Hanks character and the Zoe Lister-Jones character. She's just given birth and then they bring the baby home. And her doctor has told her not to look at her crotch until their 6-week appointment. And I'm just going to give a blanket condemnation right here. I don't ever want to see another man write about what a woman's stuff looks like after she's given birth, ever. It's not his place. There's a totally different tenor to when women write scenes about women's bodily functions, like the bridesmaid example is a great one, but like it was so misogynistic. They even had the part where the doctor's like telling the husband you can't have sex for 6 weeks, and he's like, oh, did we know that? Like, shut the fuck up, she just had a baby, no one right. cares about your crank.
Also, not fucking everybody knows that. Internet, yes. What are you, a Mennonite?
I know. Yeah. Also, but then no. It's like,
yeah, keep going, whole, keep going.
There's this whole thing where she's like, it looked like the Predator when it takes its mask off, and then she's supposed to like freeze a rubber glove full of, you know, ice so that she can stick a finger in hers to give
not
relief because she's in a lot of pain. And then she's like bent over the sink and he's like underneath trying to jam it in there because she doesn't want to look again. And it's like, this is, first of all, this is should not be on TV because it's disgusting. And second of all, this is just disgusting anyway, like wherever it was. This is not a story I want to see told by a man. And it's not interesting. And let's maybe give women a break about what their bodies look like after they've pushed a child through them. It was disgusting. And there were two more acts after that that were not as bad, but they were still bad.
Can I just add to this?
Please.
A little bit? First of all, as a father.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's right. I just want to add to it by saying the only thing you should say afterwards is it is a magical portal. It is a magical portal that fills me with wonder.
Yes.
It is magical. It like literally I did not watch my child come out literally because I was not interested in that.
Fair.
But I had the same view that my wife did, and it was like the craziest magic trick I've ever seen. So there's that. But then there's also the part where Wendy and I are watching the pilot, and I had seen it before. And Wendy and I are watching it, and they start doing the rubber glove thing, and Wendy is like, that is not a thing.
I suspected this is not it a wasn't. Thing. Yeah.
Like, never heard of this. No, I do not imagine that this is a thing. Like, to put what you insert part of a, like, why an entire rubber glove then?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, honestly.
Well, you said magic. Otter pop.
Magic.
Yeah, exactly. When there were perfectly good otter pops.
Well, they were perfectly good.
I am not a doctor. Enjoy your day.
When you said magic portal, all I can think of was there's like a rainbow bridge from Asgard coming out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what
Path
I well,
thought. Yeah.
There is, and at the other end is your baby. Like, be grateful that she let you
also,
do that to her. Don't
like,
be critical.
It sounds like they took the worst part of the last season from Arrested Development, which is siloing everybody away from everybody else. So
yeah.
That's an interesting.
Well, everyone
choice.
Comes together in the fourth one, but by then it's like you definitely don't care. And there's right. It's really stupid. Don't watch it. I've already devoted too much time to thinking about it
right,
as it
moving
is.
On.
So yeah. Bad times, life in pieces. Sarah.
Oh, does Dave not have a...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, his was the Bastard Executioner.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Before I share about Dr. Ken, I'd like to note that this was the result of my husband daring me to watch it. We were watching, I think, 2020 on demand because we're those old people. And there was a fucking ad. We could not fast forward for Dr. Ken. And we were like writhing in pain, like even on mute, which we finally muted it. It was like, oh my God, like it even looks stupid without the sound. So It's like, yeah, I have a screener for that. I don't know why the universe thinks that I would ever watch that. And Dan's like, I bet you couldn't get through the whole thing. And I was like, I bet you're right. He's like, I dare you. And I was like, fine. 8 minutes.
Oh.
Then I ran outside into traffic. Unfortunately, there were no cars coming. It is so terrible. Like, I guess I know who it's for. Monsters.
Yeah, point of order here. I should mention, because nobody else did, we've moved on to the next topic.
Oh, sorry. This is shows no one should be into. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes. Sorry. Dr. Ken, no one should be into this. I mean, I guess, like, the best way I can describe it is that it's like his stand-up crammed into quote-unquote dialogue. But, you know, it starts off with, like, hemorrhoid humor.
Oh, boy.
Like, the opening is Stephen Tobolowsky and then Dr. Ken, like, looking at his butthole and then being rude to him and then slapping his flank like he's a dog. And it's not great. I don't, like, this is everything I hate about sitcoms. This is everything I hated about Community. This is everything I hate about other things I hate, like raisins and humidity. I mean, it's really terrible. It's, like, insultingly terrible. Don't watch it. Just let it crawl into the woods and die by itself.
Okay.
Jeff.
Joe Rees gonna be so disappointed to hear that.
Jeff, what is your show no one should be into?
Well, as far as new shows go, I mean, I guess the one that's most puzzling to me is Rosewood.
Uh-huh.
Because at no point does it feel like it's like I'm watching, like I feel like it's like, am I watching? Do I now live in an alternate universe where I'm supposed to just accept that there's like a freelance autopsy guy who's so fabulously wealthy from his business that he has billboards all over town and a fucking space age place where he looks at bodies that people have looked at already? Like, I couldn't get past any of it.
That's what the show is about?
Yes.
I just thought it was a regular medical drama, but he's dying or something. Oh, no, God.
I thought it was about incense. Oh.
No, it is not. No, that's Sandalwood. And that's on TLC.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the one on HGTV. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, HGTV. No, it's, you know, of course he's got like, of course he's like got some sort of heart condition that he's not going to live that long. So he's like making the most of it or whatever. But like I was talking to a friend of mine at a party and he's like literally every scene he gives another excuse, like another reason that he's motivated to do what he does. It's like first it's like his heart thing. And then it's like his dad was this. And then it's like, I didn't even watch it deep enough into it to pick up on that. But it was just like, it was so like, like, I don't even, like, he's super self-confident.
He had a sled named Rosewood.
Yes, exactly. He just shows up and, like, happens to show up at, like, you know, a crime scene and starts, like, from beyond the tape giving, like, oh, I can see that he's got, like, salt rings around his mouth. So that means this. And it's just like, what is even happening that we're all just like, yes, that sounds totally believable that someone would have this job and this would be the world they live in. Like, it's so, I just don't even understand, like, how some, like, I just don't understand. I don't understand television anymore.
Yeah, that was one where we got a screener, and I was like, maybe I'll, and then I saw a promo for it, and I was like, yeah, I don't need to pay attention to this one. It's going to die a swift death. Let's just let it rake itself.
It does have one thing in common with Minority Report, and that is that every scene is brightly lit enough that you can see literally everything in the frame. Uh-huh. So that's good. So that's very comforting to watch something that's so brightly lit that it's like, is this a catalog shoot? What the? Am I looking? Is this a Pottery Barn I'm watching? Very weird.
Good choice. Dave, what is your show no one should be into?
Well, we've already talked about Minority Report on this podcast. I've had my say about that. El Stinko. Mm-hmm. But even worse than that, and the one that everybody should be avoiding if they can't already figure it out, of course, is Heroes Reborn.
Ooh.
Carrying on the proud tradition of Heroes Season 2 and 3. It's Heroes Reborn. Yeah, it's terrible. It's still stuck in time. The world has moved on since Heroes. Tim Kring has not. He's still just throwing all his weird, you know, mutant-esque ideas, or sorry, Evos, or whatever they call them in the show now, and seeing what sticks, including, you know, so the first one, there was a guy who could teleport. You know, that's pretty common stuff. Now there's a person that can live in a video game. It's like, okay, that makes sense. That's the way evolution works.
Really?
Yes.
And there's like 2007 quality 3D graphics in this world that's supposed to be right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are video games I play on my computer in real time that have better graphics than this ever now game inside of Heroes Reborn. It's kind of laughable. There isn't really even anything compelling about this. Like, even the horn-rimmed glasses dude, you know, seems sort of neutered and blah.
Well, they've
picked
he was always my favorite character in as much as
when
when I watched the show, which was not for very long, but they've now paired him with like a fucking internet nerd character who's even got a dumb ginger beard who's like a truther of this bomb event that kicks off everything. So it's like, now he's got this albatross that he's got to lug around with him and explain shit to. Like, just get rid of that guy. He's not interesting.
Yeah. And that the internet guy kind of like, I want it to be a dream sequence from Broad City where that guy is the roommate.
Where he's Bevers.
Bevers, yeah. That's about the only way I could think I could actually watch that. But yeah, it's bad. It's stinky.
As I wrote, as I wrote in my post about it last week, when we got to the end of it, I turned to Dave and said, that wasn't so bad. And he was like, what? And I realized that the reason was, now, because of Under the Dome, I can always watch another sci-fi show and say, well, I've seen worse, because I really have seen the absolute worst. Yeah. So only relative to Under the Dome is it okay, but it's not good.
No.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
Oh, I was just gonna throw in that like I didn't have any faith that like, oh, they're gonna reboot this. Like, somehow I knew, I haven't seen it yet, but somehow I knew that they weren't going to be like, you know what has happened since the first Heroes is that the CW and other networks have figured out how to do superhero shows. So we should just jump fully on board with that.
Yeah.
And apparently they still don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that. Like, superhero films and TV shows are literally they succeed to such a high extent. And I feel like Heroes is still afraid to call a superhero a superhero.
Yeah. And also the CW cracked the code where, you know, it doesn't need to live in the same universe as like the movie properties. It has a different tone. It is more, you know, they can explore their relationships. You know, in that show, it is sort of winky where, you know, the movies can be, you know, dark and serious. And it's sort of like, you know, it's a bit Jekyll and Hyde if you ever would be able to compare the same character from the movies and the TV show. But Warner Brothers said, well, fuck it. You know, that's just the way it is. That's just the way we're going to operate. And it works.
Yeah.
And, you know, you couldn't make the Dark Knight TV show. Like, it just wouldn't really work. But you can make the Flash, you know, and Arrow. And that sort of works. So,
isn't the Dark Knight show Daredevil?
But that's not network TV, right?
No, I know. Yeah. Right, yeah. You're right.
Right.
And on a side note, I do want to say that my improv group, the Ginger Albatross, is playing this weekend.
I love those guys.
Yeah. We've gotten really good.
Drink
we could really use, we need to bring at least 10 people or we're going to lose our time slot. So.
My show that no one should be into is one that I already spoke about at length last week. It is Best Time Ever with Neil Patrick Harris. Yeah. It's terrible. Please listen to last week's episode for all the reasons why. It sucks.
All right. Anybody have honorable mentions? Things that they didn't quite get to?
No, not really. Right. Unless we have a category for like, not as annoying as I was expecting, but still not worth setting a season pass for.
Why not?
The Muppets.
Oh, did you? I'm surprised you even watched it, actually.
Well, yeah, it was like, it set out to be a hate watch, and then it was like, that was a perfectly enjoyable. I mean, I watched both the episodes. I was like, that was perfectly enjoyable. There are things that are really annoying about it. There are things that are pretty funny about it. And yet I'm done.
Mm, I'm done. My honorable mention something that didn't fall into any of these categories really is Downton Abbey. We flew to England to watch the season 6 premiere. If you had hoped that in its final season, it would solve a lot of the problems it's been having for the last, let's say, 3 or 4. That is not the case.
Literally, the premiere was just an echo of every thread you thought was sewn up
in the Christmas
last season.
Special.
It's like there was just like, well, you know, here's the last thing about the police and Bates. Here's the last thing about Mary's guy troubles and blah, blah, blah. Like,
they all come back.
They all come back. And there was like, was there anything new introduced? I don't even think there was.
Well, there was stuff about the Mrs. Hughes Carson wedding.
Oh, right.
Better left unsaid. Right. You'll all see in January. Oh, you'll all see.
My honorable mention is just that Grandfathered and Grindr were not nearly as terrible as the promos made them seem, which really speaks to the level of creating promos in today's network workspace, Jeff.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Nope. Did you know that Blue Bloods is starting season 6?
I did know that. Netflix sent me an alert that it had all of season 5 because it knows I'm a million years old.
I was like, well, wow. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you guys, I live in Los Angeles, bragging, but I don't know if you guys see like the one sheeters for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or not. Have you seen these?
No.
There's no outdoor advertising in Hawaii, so no.
Okay, I have to find it because literally there is some photoshopping done that is bananas, which is, they've added cleavage lines.
Oh boy.
But she's wearing she's wearing like a neckline that's very high already. So it's literally like cleavage lines that are like maybe an inch and a half below her collarbone.
Sexy.
And I'm like, and I kept looking at it like that.
She's
can't,
got
like
she's got giant cylinder boobs. Is what we're saying.
I mean, honestly, her boobs would have to
she's
be
got
like
milk this, cartons, not milk jugs.
They would have to be like the size of classroom globes.
Oh my god.
I mean, I'll try to find a picture, but it is maybe somebody who's seen these also can back me up. Maybe I'm just crazy.
I think I have seen that on the CW's website, actually.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's bananas. It's like, take it easy. Like, we understand that she's a lady. Like, you don't have to give her, like, additional cleavage lines.
Well, that can go into the bad Photoshop Hall of Fame alongside that one shot from Bad Judge last year where it was like her right leg was growing out of like the middle of her left thigh or something. It's like she was crooked in such a way it just made no sense. I mean, nothing will ever be worse than the Photoshop of that very first poster for The Night Shift, but you know, we have to make our own fun as time goes on. All right, that's your fall preview.
Hey, Sam. Your loving parents, Peg and Jim, wanted to wish you a happy 27th birthday. They asked us to play this recording for you. Although it is very personal, they said it was the perfect way to express their love for you.
You're the birthday, you're the birthday, you're the birthday, boy or girl.
From your parents and everyone here at Extra Hot Great, happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Sam!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
And all the best for the year ahead.
What day is today? It's
Sam's
birthday. What a day for a birthday. Let's all have some cake.
And you smell like one, too.
Hey, Liv.
Hey, Mom.
We just finished watching season 9, episode 9 of Face Off.
That's right.
What was this episode about?
They had to do an apocalyptic.
The four horsemen of the?
Apocalyptic.
Let's try one more time. Four horsemen of the?
Apocalyptic.
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
Yes. Do you remember what apocalypse is?
The end of the world. But actually, there is no end of the world because the world just keeps on going in circles forever and ever and ever.
Do you think there will ever be an end of the world where because we eat all the food or there are too many wars that earth will just be the end?
Jesus.
Nope.
All right. Cool. So in this story, they had the four horsemen of the apocalypse, war, famine, pestilence, and death.
I did like the idea of making actually teams and then comparing who's better war, who's better, you know?
Yes, because you and I were comparing them, the two teams against each other for each character, and you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And who is your favorite this week?
It was Ben, but he was on the bottom. He said, oh, there's no point now that I'm going home. Believe in yourself. Think good chances instead of thinking bad chances.
Mm-hmm, because did he end up going home?
No. So next time, don't think about bad chances.
I think you should write him a note, and maybe he can keep it in his pocket. Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself, Ben. But that would be more than just the note.
Maybe it could be his ringtone.
What's a ringtone?
When your phone rings.
Oh, yeah, that would be funny. Ring, ring, ring. Believe in yourself, Ben.
Yeah. So who were the two on the top?
So it was Nora and Evan.
And what did Nora do?
Nora was, I think, famine.
Yep, and you learned what famine is?
It's when you can't eat something. You starve.
Yeah, there's no food left.
But how could someone live so long that there's no food?
Magic.
Silly mom.
And who is the other one who's in the top? Oh, you already said Evan. And he did?
Death. But what does bone and muscles have to do with death? So what he did is he tried to turn it the other way around. He put muscles over bone.
Yep, and...
Point of order, she meant bone over muscle.
Yeah.
I was not so sure that the judges would like that, because usually they're sticklers for anatomy, but this time they said that it was a good job taking a chance.
Yes, I know how they liked it, but I don't understand why they loved it for this challenge, because what does muscles have to do with death?
I think he was just trying to show that the exposed muscles and exposed bone, like when you're dying, I guess. I don't know. And in the bottom, we already said it was Ben, and who is in the bottom with him?
Kevin, who ended up going home.
Do you remember why?
Because it looked like a fly's diseased baby born.
Did they say that? I missed that.
He said it.
They were saying how his horseman looked more like...
A Goonie fly baby born?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But it showed that it wasn't strong because it was a Goonie baby.
Right. Goonies is a movie.
Okay.
It's okay. I can't describe what it... I have not seen this movie, so I don't know.
Probably Tara's making fun.
No.
She might be making fun of me.
I haven't seen it either.
Or the valued guest. I feel like Sarah's on my side.
I know that Gordon's making fun
yeah,
of you.
It's overrated. Oh.
If you were designing the challenge this week and you had to pick somebody, some characters, four that go together so that you could challenge the artists, which four would you have chosen?
Together, I would put a lion, a jaguar, a cheetah, and a tiger.
You would have a cat episode?
Yeah, team cat.
And would they have to make the people look like animals?
No, they would just take pet cats from the pet store and make them look like creepy, fierce cats.
Oh, we're getting away from models altogether and just using animals?
Yep.
Good luck.
I would watch that.
Face-off's going to be weird 20 years from now.
Of course it is. It's a new face-off.
Face-off, cat edition. Meow. Thanks for talking with me, Liv.
Next time.
See ya.
All right, everybody, that creepy music means it's time for The Blotter Presents. Sarah.
This week, The Blotter Presents OJ Verdict Anniversary Programming.
Oh.
Yeah. Yay.
How many years has it been? 20?
What's that?
How many years has it been? What anniversary is it? 20?
It is the 20th anniversary of The Verdict, which was October 3rd, 1995. Hat tip to Marcy, my C-minus Crime TV Twitter soulmate, for making sure I knew about the 2020 episode, The O.J. Simpson Tapes. It is available on ABC On Demand, depending on your cable/dish provider. And Fred Goldman and his excellent Spotted Socks continue to be awesomely, bluntly, so over OJ and his sociopath bullshit. He's under it. 2020 also shows us things like the Judge Ito Jell-O mold, Kim Goldman's revealingly sad MSNGRON vanity plate, missing Ron. I mean, poor girl, but come on. And some footage from OJ's deposition for the wrongful death lawsuit, much more of which you can probably see in upcoming specials, The Secret Tapes of the OJ Case, which airs Wednesday at 8 on LMN, and OJ Speaks, The Hidden Tapes, which airs Thursday at 9 on A&E. These are sister networks, and I'm not sure how these things differ from each other. We'll have to watch and find out. But if you don't have that kind of time, which is like 4 hours of DVR time, I haven't seen either of them yet. They do sound pretty similar to one another. It's maybe not worth watching both or either. And you may still have such a saturation hangover from the wall-to-wall coverage from 20 years ago. This segment is mostly a PSA on what part of the dial to avoid in the middle of this week. But I think the case still has a lot to tell us about the intersection of celebrity and criminal justice and how little has changed in terms of the effects of race and class on trials and the juries who decide them. But if you really don't have time for that, you just want like a 41-minute, you know, let's mark this anniversary true crime-wise and move on, the 2020 episode is very good. I also recommend 30 for 30's June 17, 1994 episode, which is not entirely about the low-speed chase, but it's still one of the better and more underplayed takes on that day. And if you want some reading on the topic, the late Vincent Bugliosi's Outrage is a book that got me through the 2003 blackout and is an excellent take on the case from a processy standpoint. And next week, we'll probably be talking a little bit about the Lindbergh kidnapping. Enjoy.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
Oh, hi, Stephen. This is Dave, Sarah, and Tara from Extra Hot Great here with Jeff Drake.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry we missed you.
Your handsome husband, Chris, and everyone here wanted to wish you a very happy birthday.
While you've been together with Chris for 23 years, you and us have been through a lot, too. Under the Dome, Game Time, Point Reallotment Gate, and let's not forget about that time Joe undid his canon submission halfway through. Aww. How could we?
So, on October 5th, when you unwrap your fantastic present, know that we chipped in on that. Happy birthday, Steven!
Yay!
He doesn't like you, he's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun, that's plain to see. Time to ask, will Dave hate this?
Probably.
This is less will Dave hate this than will Dave hate these, because there are two.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. Let's start with Troy, Fall of a City. Here's what you need to know. It's a BBC One production. Mm-hmm. It's a co-production with AMC, so similar to Humans. Once again, he was involved in Humans as well. It's produced by the same company that made it. And it will it's a multi-part series that will retell the fall of Troy from the perspective of one family. Doesn't have any of the stars of this yet. It's pretty early. Oh, excuse me. There's something else. HHHH is something else. Never mind. Described as an epic tale of love, revenge, intrigue, and bloodshed, it's set against the backdrop of the war between Greece and Troy and focuses on the collapse of one family. It'll go back to the saga's origins, the judgment of Paris, his passionate elopement with Helen, and the ill-starred prophecy surrounding his birth. Now, I say Dave will not hate this. The family part is a problem because it sort of makes it seem like it's going to be Troy Mland. I think...
What was that?
Troy and Homeland.
Oh, okay.
But I'm hopeful enough that the Humans connection will at least make him interested enough to check out the first episode, not to mention the BBC aspect of it as well. Sarah thinks he may well hate this. Sarah, why?
Actually, I think I overlooked the from the perspective of one family thing, so I'm gonna downgrade it to will totes hate this. I get that it is from a producer of Humans, and that did make me somewhat hesitant to say he would definitely hate this.
But that's like a movie poster, like from the studio that brought you.
It is.
Blah. Exactly.
Meaningless.
Yes.
Meaningless.
You're right. You're right.
Troyant hood slash whatever goodwill Troying aspects of this are going to be bad. There's probably going to be some annoying fucking kid. Mm-hmm. Not good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much coin any of the like production background people I don't know how much that counts with a sword and sandals series, which TV is aggressively not good at.
Yeah.
This is a great story. I don't think this is going to be good. He will hate this.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting points from everybody.
Oh, Jeff wants
a third opinion.
Wait.
Well, but, first of all, you got to be sworn in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Now proceed.
I've taken a very scientific approach to this because I think Tara has a very good point, and I think Sarah also has a very good point that this could be up. Troy is enough. would be my example. So my scientific method was that I flipped a dollar coin with Rutherford B. Hayes on the face of it, and I agree with Tara that you will not hate this.
All right. Well, I got bad news for you,
according to Rutherford B. Hayes.
This is why Dave will hate this one. I mean, the family stuff, that could go either way, because there's a lot of family stuff in Rome by necessity, because you're talking about ruling families and the people with power. So that really could go either way. Like, if it becomes like a family if it becomes like Troy brothers and sisters, pass. But I don't think that's why people make historical dramas. I think it'll be, you know, family in the service of the greater story here. You know, families in power and all the weird shit that happens there. The reason why I will hate this is very simple. Greek history is fucking boring. It is so boring. And especially the Greek history plus violence. It's not there. It doesn't have that Roman panache. It doesn't have that sore through the throat kind of feeling.
Right.
It is too far back. It is too lost in antiquity. Yeah. Well, actually, I guess it's not antiquity, is it?
Yeah, this isn't actually history, but
yeah.
Continue.
But it's just like I was bored to tears by the movie Troy. There's not much about Greek history that really interests me. I'm much more kind of an ancient Roman kind of guy. So for that reason alone, I'm sort of already, this show could be, you know, DVR. It could be the thing that sits on a DVR for 2 months before I get around to it. So that is the simple math behind why Dave will hate Troy. Moving on.
All right. Mm. Second option. The A-Team is being reassembled. Uh-huh. 20th Century Fox TV has put together a new contemporary take on the classic action series from writer-producer Chris Morgan, known from the Fast and Furious series. And his Stephen J. Cannell's daughter, Tawnia McKiernan, is also apparently involved, as is Sleepy Hollow executive producer Albert Kim, who is writing the adaptation. Like the original NBC show, the new A-Team revolves around a diverse team of American Special Forces operatives. Unlike the original all-male squad, the new team will include both male and female members.
Shocking.
I know. The group has been framed for a crime they didn't commit, so that's the same. Set out to clear their names by uncovering the Black Ops conspiracy that set them up along the way, the blah, blah, blah. Everything else sounds like it's the same. Now, I think Dave will hate this because he really loves the original. Not the women aspect. He was fine with Battlestar Galactica and female characters, formerly male characters being played by female.
I was fine with it. Like, I tolerated their inclusion.
You didn't have a problem with it, I'm saying. That
well,
wasn't
I guess
like
they
a reason...
comprise 50% of the population. I'll let this one slide, says Dave Cole.
You know what I mean.
Put that on the box. Quote.
Whatever. But I think that your love of the original's schlockiness is such that you will not be into the TV show, much as you did not, as I recall, care for the movie adaptation. So I say Dave will hate this. Sarah thinks he will not.
I think he may not.
Okay.
Here's why. And I'm not sure.
I like
that
somebody
that
demonstrates the courage of their convictions. So let's just go, Dave will hate this.
Okay.
And then argue from there, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sarah's disgusted.
No, Sarah says he won't.
I know. She said
Sarah's
he
baffled.
Might not. And okay. I'm saying you got to go. You got to go 100% full throttle.
All right,
fine.
Go ahead.
Dave will fucking adore this so much that he will divorce Tara and marry it. Here's why.
Wow. All right. Wow. I like this.
Go ahead.
Courageous. When not being interrupted, Sarah is heartened by the involvement of a Sleepy Hollow producer. That indicates to me that there might be this, like, first of all, solid casting, and second of all, this, like, fuck it crazy attitude, at least in the first 6 to 10 episodes, that, like, it's not not schlocky, but it just like it doesn't look down, which I think is part of the charm of the original, which I also loved and wrote many high school papers in front of on Saturday afternoons. It's just like it just kind of didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And I think that if Albert Kim can get that quality into the new A-Team, that it could be great and capture the spirit that Dave and I both loved. Dave will adore it. Good luck, Tara.
I would also say, now that you've said that, Fast and Furious also has a fuck it attitude that, you know, it
yes, exactly.
It plays around with that stuff too. So I won't say that I'm backing off my position, but I see your side of it. Jeff, do you want to weigh in?
Well, Rutherford B. Hayes has an opinion on this. And that opinion is that Dave will love this. Wow. And here's why. He may think now that he will not love it, but when it happens, he'll watch it and it'll be terrible because the casting will be wrong, the tone will be all wrong, but Dave will look forward to seeing it every week and will be won over by how terrible it is and love watching it because it is so terrible that he will watch it in the same way that he watches all of those other terrible shows that he loves.
Well, the thing about terrible shows is that it's hard to marry something that isn't super high concept and still be that quality of terrible that I love. Like, that's why Almost Human was such a perfect terrible show. It's because its premise was so stupid and the execution was just so, you know, just weirdly earnest at some points where, you know, like, yeah, sure, there's a robot with a Ken doll crotch in the change room. What of it? That I don't think a, you know, paramilitary drama is really going to afford, you know, for those kind of crazy scenarios. So I'm not sure about that part of it, the hate watch part of it. I am not against, like, I am not one of those, like, you can't remake this because it's sacrosanct kind of person. Like, that's fine, remake it. You know, like, if it's terrible and it just, like, has one season, it's out, it's not going to, like, ruin the original for me, you know? Like, I still love Star Wars, even though the prequels were, you know, not great.
Sure.
That's fine. You know, mm-hmm. I can still, I'm able to separate these things like a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
it really is going to depend on, and whoever's eating candy can stop. They need to.
I'm not in trouble for once. Yay!
Where was I? What was I saying? I'm so upset about this candy, guys.
You were about to agree with me.
It's going to depend on.
Oh yeah, it's going to depend on the writing, and I think like the movie I didn't really hate, like Tara said. I just thought like what they have to change from the movie is not be so beholden to everything on the series. Like they have to have freedom to move. Like the movie was like, you know, let's get the guy who looks like this. Let's get, you know, like we can't get Mr. T, he's too old, so, you know, we'll give this guy a faux hawk and, you know, we'll go at it, and, you know, like Dirk Papard, yeah, Liam Neeson,
hey,
you know, was kind of a boring Hannibal in that movie, and they just need to kind of like have that Battlestar Galactica freedom to move around, because
Mads
Battlestar
Nicholson
Galactica
is Hannibal, am I right?
Come on. You know, they had you know, a lot of grief before that show even aired, but it turned out to be a great show for the most part until they couldn't figure out anything anymore because they Chris Carter themselves into 5 million things. So I'm going to say now, you know, I can't look into my crystal ball and say for sure, but boy, it sounds like right now Dave will not hate this.
Hey,
yes,
zero
my God.
For two.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've never gotten one of these right before, and I get two one day.
You know, yeah. If I may, you know who would make a good Hannibal for the TV show? Mm. Powers Booth.
Mm, too old.
You think he's too old?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Hannibal's got to be like late 40s sort of guy, not like 82 or whatever Powers Booth.
Fine. I added an extra thing to be wrong about.
Yeah. All right, everybody. It's time for the canon. Mr. Jeff Drake, take it away.
Well, I was surprised to find out that not a single episode of this particular show is in the canon, and so I'm excited to present for your perusal, Fawlty Towers, Series 1, Episode 6, The Germans. To me, this show is an amazing show. even though it's problematic because I really don't feel like you can watch many episodes in a row without suffering from like symptoms very similar to a heart attack. Because everything is so – Basil Fawlty, played by John Cleese, is so tightly wound that it is impossible not to suffer – not to sort of feel that after watching the show. First of all, Basil Fawlty is not an admirable person. He is not likable. He is maybe the biggest misanthrope to ever appear in a comedy. And – people try this type of character over and over again, and it's probably only because John Cleese is such a great comedic actor that they even get away with this for as many episodes as they do. For those of you who don't know, Basil Fawlty and his wife Sybil own a hotel and called Fawlty Towers, and they're terrible hotel runners. And Basil gets no respect from anyone, least of all his wife. But then also least of all anyone else, primarily because he gives no respect to anyone. But he really – it's always sort of a surprise to him that he doesn't get respect because he really believes that he deserves it. And he always tries very hard to win and believes he deserves to win despite really having very few redeeming qualities. That said, into the episode we go. In this episode, Basil, it opens in the hospital. Sybil, his wife, is going to be away for 3 days because she's having an ingrown toenail operated on. So this, of course, sets up the fact that she doesn't believe he can do anything. She pesters him about, is he going to hang the moose head? Is he going to remember that there's a fire drill? Don't forget that the German tourists are coming. And these are the things that are in play. And after starting off in the hospital where Basil shows his true colors, he's completely rude to the nurse who wants him to leave. He and Sybil, you always wonder how is it they ever got together, but maybe it's just like they called a detente. They're like the mutual dislike of each other is what holds them together. There's this hilarious, like, physical beat where he comes out of the room and he runs into the doctor who's black, and he sort of does this hilarious, like, weird two-step back pedal that's like only John Cleese can do, where he's obviously surprised to find out that the doctor is black. But then he like covers it beautifully because, of course, he's so flawed. He hates everybody. He distrusts everybody. But then he's pleased to hear that this will be very painful for Sybil. So that pleases him. He gets to the hotel and immediately starts. Now he feels like he's in his element. This is Basil winning because he is in charge. He can run it without Sybil there. He can prove to everyone that he can do this, even though deep down he really doesn't like it. The problem with the hotel is that it has customers and he really doesn't like customers. So he's going to hang this moose head, this giant moose head that Sybil hates but he loves, and he's going to hang it. And of course, he promised her he would do it, and just as he's marking up the wall to put the nail in the wall to hang it up, the phone rings and no one is around to answer it, including Polly and Manuel, who are the two people who work with him, and that's this clip.
Polly! Polly! Manuel!
Oh. Yes, Fawlty Towers, hello. I was just doing it, you stupid woman. I just put it down to come here to be reminded by you to do what I'm already doing. I mean, what is the point of reminding me to do what I'm already doing? I mean, what is the bloody point? I'm doing it, aren't I? Yes, I picked it up, yes. No, I haven't had a chance yet. I've been at it solidly ever since I got back. Yes, I will, yes. No, I haven't yet, but I will, yes. Yes, I know it is, yes. I'll try and get it cleared up. Anything else? I mean, would you like the hotel moved a bit to the left or... Yes, right. Well, enjoy the operation, dear. Let's hope nothing goes wrong. Wish it was an ingrown tongue.
Like all of the great moments in Fawlty Towers, this sets up a chain of events. There's going to be a running gag of Sybil calling always immediately right when Basil is doing the thing that he knows he needs to do that she is reminding him to do as he's doing it. And it sets this up in such a way that he then, the next moment he gets a chance to put up the moose head, then this happens.
Oh, will you answer that, please? I'm trying to put this up.
40 Towers. Oh, hello, Mrs. Fawlty.
I'm doing it! I'm doing it now! Tell her I'm doing it now!
So, Basil keeps trying to do that. Meanwhile, it's getting closer to noon, which is when the fire, when the fire drill is supposed to happen. And while then Sybil calls, and it may be in that phone call or a subsequent call, she calls to remind him to do the fire drill, and he's like, yes, he's going to do it. She reminds him that he needs the key. The key is not where he put it last. She has put it in the safe. The minute he opens the safe, the burglar alarm goes off, which, of course, everybody in the hotel thinks is the fire drill. And Basil stops him from leaving because it's not noon yet, and that is obviously not the fire drill, the fire bell. And so he has this conversation with them.
No, no, what's the matter with you all? It's perfectly simple. We have the fire drill when I ring the fire bell. That wasn't the fire bell, right?
Well, how are we supposed to know that wasn't the fire bell?
Because it doesn't sound like the fire bell. It didn't.
It did.
No, it didn't. The fire bell is a different... It's a semitone higher.
A semitone.
At least, anyway, the fire drill doesn't start till 12 o'clock.
It is 12 o'clock.
Well, it is now, but that's because we've been standing about arguing about it.
And so then finally the bell goes, he finally agrees to, he's going to set off the fire alarm and let everybody go. And the bell is ringing, and then just go ahead and play this clip.
It's not fire, it's only bells. Where are you going? There isn't a drill yet. I'm just showing them what the bell sounds like. Now, will you go in there? Go help Chef.
Chef's not here.
Well, go and start the chip.
Chip.
Yes, when bells go, I get it. Stay.
Come on.
No fire, only practice. Tell him, Polly. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Perhaps I'm upstairs.
What's happening now? Now.
It's a little hard to hear, but at the end, the fire bell goes off, and immediately the phone rings. And Basil screams into the phone, "We're having it!" Also, what I forgot to set up is that meanwhile, Manuel, who is Spanish and helps out and is constantly abused by Basil, has gone into the kitchen and accidentally started an actual fire. And he has come out of the kitchen, and Basil keeps telling him, "No, there is no fire. It's just a drill." And he pushes him back into the kitchen where the fire is. And then locks him in the kitchen where it's on fire. A side note, he actually got second-degree burns on his hands, the guy who played Manuel, during the scene.
Is that
so
true?
Anyway,
oh, my God.
That is true. Wow. That is true. So he locks him in there. And then, of course, everybody comes back in from the fire drill. Then there's a real fire. And now what has happened is, in the course of this, there's been all this physical comedy of John Cleese falling over, the moose head falls on his head, and then after this fire drill thing, he gets the fire extinguisher, sprays him in the face, and blinds him, and then he bends over, and when he stands back up, Manuel is holding a skillet, he hits his head on the skillet, and is knocked out, and then he wakes up in the hospital. He's had a concussion. This is a perfect example of, I mean, Fawlty Towers, in its essence, is more of a farce than just a comedy. And so there's always this running around and things getting more and more wound up and everything sort of weaving in. So finally the moose head and the fire drill sort of come to a head to give Basil a concussion, which sets up the whole final act of the show, which is the Germans arriving. And so Basil is supposed to stay in the hospital, but of course he comes back and he's just put a jacket over his smock and he still has a head bandage on and he tries to pretend that everything is fine. And then when he hears about the Germans, he can't help himself. Every single time he says, "Don't mention the war," he keeps saying to Polly and everyone else, "Don't mention the war." And then he keeps mentioning the war. And so the last 5 minutes become this one long, hilarious scene of Basil dealing with these four German tourists who are just trying to have food. They're just trying to order some dinner from him. And go ahead and play clip, the fifth clip now.
Now, would you like to eat first or would you like a drink before the war? Meaning that trespassers will be tied up with piano wire. Sorry. Oh, top of the old leg. Got a touch of shrapnel on the wall. Korean, more sorry than Korean.
Thank you, we will eat now.
Oh, good, please, do allow me.
So they go in to sit down, and of course, Basil starts taking their order, but their order just gets, he keeps repeating it back and just here, and they order prawns, and he says Eva prawn, and everything he ties back into the war until, and it keeps upsetting them until this final moment.
I can't, I've got too much to do. Listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right. So, it's all forgotten now, and let's hear no more about it. So that's two egg mayonnaise, a prawn Goebbels, a Hermann Göring, and four colded salads. Oh, wait a minute, I got a bit confused here. Sorry, I got a bit confused because everyone keeps mentioning the war. So could you... What's the matter?
It's all right.
Is there something wrong?
Will you stop talking about the war?
Me? You started it?
We did not start it.
Yes, you did. You invaded Poland.
maybe one of the greatest lines ever in a sitcom. Anytime anybody says to me, you started it, that pops into mind. So without a character like Basil Fawlty, like I feel like you wouldn't have George Costanza or... also Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm, or like a character like Larry Sanders. Like, he's just the ultimate, like, self-centered, has no real picture of how he comes across in the world. And the other part of this show that's so great is John Cleese's physical comedy is so amazing, especially at the very end of that's if you can probably
riot?
Hear my child. Yeah.
Remember your safe word.
Yes. My child is screaming outside. He's just having a grand time, everybody. The very end of the scene with the Germans, Basil decides like he's got something that'll win them over. This will cheer her up. And you can't really put it in the podcast because it's all visual. He does a Hitler impersonation. And of course, Goose steps out of the restaurant and then back in. And it's completely like an homage to the Ministry of Silly Walks from Monty Python.
And studio audience goes crazy.
They go bananas for it. And it's, you know, he's got his finger under his nose for the mustache and everything. And like I said at the top, like for as great as Fawlty Towers is, and there's only 12 episodes of it, I do not recommend binge watching it, even though it's only so short. Each episode the experience is so much like winding a spring tighter and tighter until the conclusion of the episode. Where at the end of every episode, Basil is ultimately completely undone by whatever is going on. And every episode, while it's enjoyable and hilarious, does end with a little bit of relief. Like, oh, thank goodness. Like, I'm through that ordeal, because you just ride along with Basil and his like crazy, just like he just makes things worse at every step. But I don't think that hanging out with him for a long time is supposed to be completely enjoyable, even though it's hilarious. So he's impossible and frustrating, and this episode is like a perfect example of why this character and this show deserve to be in the canon. Over to you guys.
Should I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't have much to add. This is an excellent encapsulation of the episode. If you have never seen any other moment of Fawlty Towers, you've probably seen the end of this episode with the verbal sparring at the table and the goose stepping and everything. You've probably seen it in like some kind of compilation of like the best of British comedy, because it's a classic for a reason. You're so right that it's a tense experience to watch. You only played a bit of it, but the back and forth where he's trying to explain why it's not the fire drill and the guests are sure it is the fire drill. Like, it really goes on and on and on to, like, it does the thing where it's like, it's funny, and then it's goes on for so long it's not funny, and then it ends in a way that's funny again. And yeah, this is a good selection from this show, and very well presented. Dave.
Sarah, when are you going to?
Oh, okay.
This never quite came online for me. I have watched Fawlty Towers before. I didn't remember this episode somehow. I enjoyed it. This was like a little, even sort of allowing for the fact that it is supposed to be kind of this noises offy physical comedy farce, and acknowledging that John Cleese is amazing, like that boneless bow that he does at the door of the dining room is like, I mean, it's everything. He times everything really well, but the sensation that Jeff refers to of the spring winding tighter is one way of putting it. For me, it just felt not modulated. Like, I felt like I was being screamed at through a cocaine screen for 30 minutes, which may have been what was happening. I mean, like, it, you know, it's not like it was bad or sucked or, you know, was put together badly, but like some of the things that you point to as being like reasons that it's a classic, like the goose stepping, I just felt was like kind of pandering. I don't know. Like, this just was not, the talking moose I enjoyed. There were things that I enjoyed in it as an overall experience. I felt like yelled at for half an hour, so I'm not sure this one is for me.
Whole time I was watching it, I did think my internal Buncey was like, oh no, this isn't gonna work. I knew you were gonna say everything you just said.
I'm the enemy of British joy.
I didn't say that. I just said this is everything Sarah doesn't like.
You didn't have to say
in my head.
It's interesting to have you know, in Mark II, to have Sarah on the canon, you know, when it comes to sitcom stuff, because it's really got a hit in a particular way.
Yep.
To get her vote. This is interesting. So I am a huge Monty Python fan. I'm a huge Fawlty Towers fan. I think, like, when I first discovered Monty Python when I was whatever, 6 or so, it was like the best thing in the world. Monty Python, Weird Al, like those were the two formative comedy things of my youth, right? Like, stick your head in a microwave, get yourself a tan. That's funny stuff, weird.
I agree.
So when it came, and you know what? I it's weird that this show hasn't hit the canon. And I do remember thinking about it, but just ultimately picking a drama, I think, at the time for whatever reason.
I think Matt presented Waldorf Salad and it did not get in.
Oh, really?
In Mark One.
That really?
That's my recollection.
Because that's my favorite episode, I think. So I don't know why.
Might have been me and Joe voted it down.
With General Reekin from Empire Strikes Back.
That's right.
Yeah. this episode is pretty famous for the Germans bit. But I do want to talk about the elephant in the room that nobody's talked about yet.
Oh. Well, I saw you clipped it, so I was going to leave it to
the
you.
The anti-moose sentiment.
So Jeff was talking about Basil's meeting with the black doctor in the hospital. And that's a scene where, like whatever, what is this, 1978
or something?
Eight?
Six?
Yeah.
Like, mid-70s.
74 then.
Oh, 74.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, Basil's not supposed to be an upstanding, perfect citizen human being. So, you know, that weird step back thing is of the time, of the culture, but also he's not the most enlightened person in the world.
It's of a piece with his Archie Bunkerness.
Yeah.
Which doesn't come up a lot because they're in England and mostly everyone's white.
Well, I know Archie Bunkerness is fair.
I actually had a note about this that I was like, that was kind of like this. It's something you would have seen on the Jeffersons.
Mm. Yeah. Or
you would have seen it in a contemporary American sitcom as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for that reason, it works. Like, he's not, you know, it's something, it was in the culture at that time, you know, the whole idea of upward mobility and it still being a relatively rare event, at least for older people. You know what I mean?
But also, this is episode 6 of the first season. Like, if he didn't have any reaction to a black doctor, then the audience would think it was weird because we already know that he's not a great person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Just to go back, though, I don't know if Archie Bunker, like, he was sort of like outwardly racist. Right.
Right.
And I don't think that's Basil's.
Well, he's more polite because he's English. But right. As I said, it also doesn't come up as much in the show because everybody's white.
Right. So then we get to the character of the major, who is sort of like, he lives at the hotel. He's in all the episodes. And I will say this about that actor. He really nails the confused old, you know, I just want to tell every story I still remember thing.
The tension of paying attention to an old person and not being able to escape.
Yeah, but the way he is confused, like in every scene he has, it's so natural that you kind of forget that this guy is acting. Like, he really seems like some of the conversations I've had with like my grandfather back in the day where it was just like, you know, skip a beat and suddenly we're on to another story and you just have to keep up, you know, and that kind of stuff. But there's a scene where, like, you know, he's talking to Basil and there's a whole, you know, Basil's just giving these little one-off things about, you know, how a confused old man he is. But there's a scene, and we're going to experience some racial epithets that plays very oddly. You need to listen to the audience reaction or lack thereof, and then we can talk about it.
I must have been keener, because I took her to see India.
India?
At the Oval. A marvelous finish. Now, Sally had to get 33 in about a half an hour, and she went off to Paolo Hans or some women. Never came back.
What a shame.
And the strange thing was that throughout the morning, she kept referring to the Indians as niggers. No, I said. Niggers are the West Indians. These people are wogs. No, she said. All cricketers are niggers.
They do get awfully confused, don't they? They're not thinkers. I see it with Sybil every day.
All right. So let's break this down.
First of all, when you rent this episode on iTunes, there is a content warning, and I assume it's because of that.
It's also on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were wondering if anything would have been edited, but nothing, right? We didn't come across an edited version?
No.
No, it has apparently, because I looked it up, because I think the first time I saw it when it was airing on PBS or whatever, I don't remember that scene.
Oh.
And it has been edited out of some broadcasts, but I think when they put it, I watched it on DVD because I have the box set, and it's in everything, but it was, and they say it was with John Cleese's, like, you know, blessing to edit it out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it is an interesting, like, because it does play very weird, but like when he says wogs, which is much more like the fact that that lands.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if that wogs was like a release.
Right.
Yeah.
Like somehow in the, you know, totem pole of racist things you can say.
Right.
And wogs is not British.
If
or
it
not
ended
white.
With honky, everyone would have been fine.
Right.
And it right. Came, no, yeah. I mean, it's a very, you know, pump the brakes moment in the episode for sure.
But the difference between, and why I brought up the hospital scene and this one, which is there seems to be some sort of like acknowledgement that Basil in the black doctor scene is behind the times and, you know, isn't the most progressive reaction in the world there. And, you know, it's also played for comedy and it is a very physical scene. But in this scene, like, I didn't catch the same acknowledgement. Like, yeah, the major is this old, you know, old man, and he doesn't have any wits about him, but there's no, throughout the scene Basil keeps on throwing away these counterpoints for everything he's saying under his breath, but there's no counterpoint to this thing. His counterpoint is that women are, you know, dumb or whatever it was at the end there, you know, like there's no putting out of that fire that was started.
Right.
And so it almost seems like,
But I think that's consistent with Basil's character too. Like, first of all, he's not going to try and educate the major because he's not going to think that's his place. But also, he probably isn't going to try and educate the major because the major is too old to be educated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But then I ask, why was that in
Basil
there at all?
Basil doesn't care.
And Basil, like, doesn't care.
Yeah, okay.
Basil, what he wants is not for everyone to have, you know, to share his views or have enlightened views. He wants the major to finish his story and wander off. Yeah. That's all.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, I get that. But then I would question why that was put in there that way. I mean, I know it's 1974 and shit's different, but I just, like, even for that period of time, obviously that story was supposed to be uncomfortable. Like, it wasn't supposed to be a matter of fact, but I feel like the reaction was so matter of fact that it sort of kind of ruins that whole thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a joke that's constructed that doesn't really land like you expected it was going to. Yeah. Like, I feel like they set out, like, because Basil is very much like, go on with your story, as he is every, if you, you know, watch the whole show, like, he's never interested in what the major has to say. And this is just another story that he has to suffer through. And so he's just trying to keep him, like, he'll wrap it up eventually. And I mean, honestly, when I almost reconsidered submitting this because of this scene.
Right.
But because I do feel like it's even not trying to explain it away or excuse it. It's just like, it is what it is.
Right.
And it's there, and it's an artifact of British culture that also has an echo in American culture, and it's equally, it's troubling for the same reasons, but it's also slightly different because of the different, you know, situations, you know, but it's still, you know, white versus black and all of that, or white versus not white.
Well, I think it was supposed to be sending up both those characters.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was supposed to be indicting everyone, including the studio audience. It just hasn't aged well at all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
No, it feels like, I would say,
sorry, go ahead,
Tara.
I was just going to say, this feels like probably an exchange that a lot of people, like, of the age of the audience would have been having or not having with their own grandfathers around this time.
Yeah.
Like, he's not really supposed to say that word anymore, but is it really worth getting into a fight? No. Like, he's not going to change, so.
The other thing to keep in mind is that in the 1970s, it was a big emigration period, right? So this is, you know, you had a lot of African immigrants coming in. So, like, this was culturally, socially, like, something that was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing with the black doctor wasn't just, like, out of left field. It was,
right.
It was, you know, of that time. But I don't know. I just, like, it really kind of just stunk up the joint for me. I don't think it was, like, whatever the justification of it is, it still felt like it fell flat at the time, and certainly more so now.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like, to sort of button this up from my perspective, is I feel like it fell flat because it hit really close to the truth for the audience in a way. And I think that people could laugh off, like, the thing about his reaction to the Germans isn't indicting Germans. More, it's indicting Germans less than it's indicting the attitude of the British towards, you know, it's like, it's, yes, the, it's having fun with the fact that, like, we're not going to let the Germans off the hook, but it's still sort of sending up the British people more so than the Germans, who are just ordinary tourists just trying to have a dinner. And Basil is, like, dragging them through all of this because that's, you know, that's what he's sending up. But people can kind of go along with it because it seems like it's both parties are having a laugh, you know. And so it is troublesome. And I, you know, but it's like, you know, there it is in the midst of what I think is a really hilarious episode. And it's it's troubling. And it soured me a little bit too, but, you know, but, like, there it is. And I feel like this is generally an episode that is held up to that kind of scrutiny. Like, this is the best episode of Fawlty Towers. And so I think it's worth talking about that it does contain this thing that it's like, if that ruins the episode for you, I get it, you know. And if you can put it in the context and sort of be like, well, that's the way kind of things were, and that's a snapshot of that, then, you know, then that's fair too. So
I just have trouble with that snapshot because I think what they did was muddy. Like, I don't think it was very clear what they were doing. And so when you're dealing with language like that, when you're not really clear, when you're not very laser focused on what the joke is, it just comes off kind of racist.
Yeah.
So anyways, let's put this to a vote.
Okay.
Tara, what say you?
I vote yay.
All right. Sarah?
Before I vote, I would like to say that I didn't love this episode and that, you know, racist language section is a clanker, but it led to a really good discussion.
Yeah.
And that's why you play the games, as they say, like, you just never know what's going to happen with these canon episodes and who's going to kind of come out with something and what parts aren't going to work for which people. And so I am voting no, but thank you so much for submitting this. And I think it was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah,
Dave.
You know when somebody runs for president and then like everybody just like looks over their voting history, you know, when they were in Congress or whatever, and see what votes they, you know, missed or abstained on or voted one way, you know, because
of, or they were for before they were for against Donald
Trump
it.
Now? This is where, yeah, this is you, Tara. This is your
God.
Donald Trump moment.
Great.
I would say, like, if that scene was, if there was like a canon submission, like, I could say, you know what, watch the edited version because this is one bit that is going to ruin the rest of the episode for you. Then watch that. That would be a stronger episode in 2015 than, you know, than the one with everything in it. And I will say that moment really took me out of this episode. Like, there is a ton of funny stuff in there. And everything you said about Basil Fawlty being like this ticking time bomb in every episode is right on. And like, if you've never watched Fawlty Towers, don't let this one scene stop you from watching the series, because it is one of the funniest shows on television.
Yeah, or but, my no vote, it's a solid show. I just, yeah, this one was not for me.
It's just that, like, this here's this one thing about 1974 that just didn't really hit, and you know, 40 years into the future, it just plays so differently that it kind of ruined it for me.
So all right, so the two things that were bad that happened in 1974 were this episode and me being born. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Oh my God.
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
So, surprisingly, Fawlty Towers,
did not
season
see this
one,
coming.
Episode 6, The Germans.
Me neither.
You are not inducted into the extra lottery canon. Whoops, wrong one.
Oh. What's going on?
Americans love a winner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And will not tolerate a loser.
Look, sometimes the keys get away from me and a whole bunch of things happen, and it's really hard to correct the mistakes once they start, and then you get that.
Winner I was worried week. That David, that Dave passed out under the keyboard. Just hit them all with his head.
All right, well, speaking of things on TV that have been tarred by association, Jill and Jessa Duggar are about to be back on TLC. They are the winners of the week by virtue of having been excised from the rest of the 19 kids and counting, and they will be the stars of a series of specials about their lives as married women. So good for them, I guess. People will watch. I probably won't, but, you know, I guess this is their chance to TLC's chance to be in the Duggar business without actually involving the problematic parents or Josh. Sarah.
Loser of the week. I actually can't decide. In our doc, I put, quote, comedian, unquote, Krista Allen. Uh-huh. Not sure how she got that upgrade, since the only thing I knew her from literally was refusing to wear a thong in Feast in Project Greenlight season 3. Uh-huh. But I'm really not sure who's worse in this situation. David Spade, I mean, probably him, for allegedly ripping off the idea he co-generated with Krista Allen for, quote, a fake talent show in which participants are conned into participating in front of actors posing as judges. Mm. Krista Allen for suing him over it and being Krista Allen. TMZ for referring to her as a comedian or the show itself. Talk amongst yourselves, but those are, that's the loser group of the week, I guess.
I don't think anyone can own the idea of a reality show with fake auditioners. Like, everyone's had that idea, including me and Dave, a million years ago. So,
yeah. And I think somebody brought it to fruition for like two episodes.
It was, but maybe that's what the lawsuit is about.
Well, and it's been, I think it's been done overseas several times.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. All right.
Well, that's interesting. And that brings up this question, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
Is it?
Game time.
Oh.
Yay!
All right. This is the 12th. Holy cow. The 12th game time of the season.
Stakes could not be higher.
Definitely. It's coming down to the wire, guys.
It could be.
They could. They might be after today.
Value guess, 4 points. Tara, 4 points. Sarah, right behind with 3 points.
Oh my gosh.
As a reminder, the season ends when somebody hits 5 points. So value guess, represented by Jeff today, and Tara both have a chance to win, and Sarah has a chance to make it a three-way tie.
So exciting.
Today we are playing team building exercise from John Potts, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Team building exercise will test your knowledge of teams and groups on TV past and present. I will read you the first names of three underlings from a TV team. All right?
Okay.
First names of three characters. Mm-hmm. A correct answer is worth 3 points. If you need a clue, I'll read you the first name of the team leader. A correct answer at this point, it's worth 2 points.
I assume we're once we get
still
the three...
stuck. Okay. I'll read you everyone's full names. The correct answer at this point is worth 1 point. You only get to guess once, so make it count.
We're supposed to be identifying the show, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. John has divided the game into three parts. Old people shows, Gen X, and millennials.
Oh, boy.
And it's a rough division. Oh, okay.
Yeesh.
There are 39 questions plus a tiebreaker if we need it.
All right.
Let's see who's going to go first. Take it away, Piggy.
We will start with Tara.
All right, so let's go Tara, Jeffra, and Sarah.
Okay.
Are we ready to play team building exercise?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Roland, Cinnamon, Bernard, also known as Barney.
Hint.
The leader, Jim.
Cinnamon?
Yeah.
I need another hint.
All right. So here's the full names.
Yes.
Roland Han, Cinnamon Carter, Bernard Barney Collier, Jim Phelps. Jim Phelps might be the one that gets you this.
No, I don't know.
Anybody know that one?
No.
That's Mission Impossible.
Oh.
That's a hard one.
Okay.
But, that's picky for you. Jeff. Leonard Montgomery Pavel. Leonard Montgomery Pavel.
I'm sorry, is this me?
Yes.
Oh, God. I need a hint.
The leader is James, sometimes known as Jim. James or Jim? Leader of...
Can I hear their names again?
Yeah, Leonard, Montgomery, and Pavel.
Oh, of course. It's Star Trek, the original.
All right, that's 2 points.
Nice.
2 points. Sarah.
Yo.
Morticia... Fester Wednesday.
The Monsters. Just kidding. The Addams Family.
For 3 points?
3 points.
Okay, nice.
Tara.
Yeah.
James or Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Dick and Barbara.
Batman?
3 points.
Nice.
Jeff.
Yes.
Lilith, Eddie, Marilyn.
Wait, say it again.
Lilith, Eddie, Marilyn.
I'm just going to go for it and say, Lilith, Eddie, and Marilyn?
Lilith, Eddie, and Marilyn. You can guess now for 3 points. You can get a clue, which would be the first name of their leader. And leader's loose.
I'm going to chicken out and go for the hint.
Herman.
Herman?
Herman.
Oh, it's the Monsters.
That's good for 2 points. Sarah.
Got it.
Yep.
Carol, Greg, and Marcia.
The Brady Bunch.
That's good for 3. Picky smiles upon you. Tara.
Yes.
Picky
jinxing me.
And Picky does other things to other people. Scott, Virgil, Lady Penelope.
Thunderbirds?
Whoa.
I know some things.
Okay. My apologies. Nice pull.
What other show has a Lady Penelope?
I don't know. Tom Slick doesn't have a Penelope in it.
The Odyssey? The Animated Adventures?
No.
Jeff.
Yes.
Daisy Moses, that's one name. Ellie Bay, that's another name. And Jethro.
That would be the Beverly Hillbillies.
Correct. And by the way, this is the old people round, in case you haven't. Sarah. Danny, Keith Douglas, Ruben. Danny, Keith Douglas, and Ruben.
Ruben is the key here, I believe.
Yes. Well, that would be the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
3 points. Tara.
Yeah.
Wow. All these. Okay. This is everybody's last question. They're all pretty hard.
Okay.
Helena, Alan, Sandra.
Hint.
John.
Hint.
Helena Russell, Alan Carter, Sandra Bennis, John Koenig.
Alan Carter?
Yeah.
No, I still don't know. Sorry.
Space 1999.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Well, this is the old people round,
yeah,
guys. For Jeff, George Lee, yes, that's one name, Sam, also known as Samuel, and Atlanta.
In Atlanta?
Yeah.
Hint.
The leader, Troy. Dave will hate this.
Hint.
All right. George Lee phones Sheridan, Samuel Shore, Atlanta Shore, Troy Tempest. Those are some names. Damn.
Jesus.
Sequest DSV.
Yeah, that's a good guess. Never heard of this show before. Stingray.
Nope.
Nope.
Stingray.
Nope. Not a real
Stingray
thing.
Good thing.
Not a thing at all.
<It's> Made
a thing.
It up.
It's a dumb thing.
Sarah it's knows thing. It's a thing.
John Potts, biggest liar ever. All right, last question for the round for Sarah. Maureen, Don, and Zachary.
Maureen, Don, and Zachary. Hint.
John.
Hint.
Maureen Robinson, Major Don West, Dr. Zachariah Smith, Professor
sure.
John Robinson.
Yep.
Lost in Space?
That's
nice.
1 point.
Yeah.
1 point.
I'll take it.
All right,
this
so the old people round is over.
Super duper exciting. I have 6, Jeff has 7, Sarah has 10!
Oh my goodness.
Whoa! Right.
Close game.
Yep, very close.
We now enter the Gen X section.
Thank God.
Of team building exercise. We're starting again with Tara. I'm going to butcher this first name, so I'm going to spell it. Neris, I think. N-E-R-Y-S.
Neris, probably?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, yes.
Miles and Julian. She going to guess for 3 or
yeah,
guess
I'm
for...
going to guess and definitely be wrong. Is it Voyager? Star Trek Voyager? No.
It is not, but you're on the right track. Benjamin was a leader.
Uh-huh.
Miles, I assume you figured out Miles O'Brien from that.
Yeah.
But Julian was Julian Bashir, the doctor from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, damn it.
Deep Space Nine, yeah. And Nerys, or whatever that was. Even though her full name is Kira Nerys, or whatever, she's Bajoran, which are like space Koreans, and they have their
right.
names are flipped. They're
damn you, John Potts.
Space Koreans.
Sneaky bastard.
All right.
Space Koreans are doing a show with the Ginger Albatross.
Yeah. 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 Michael,
finally.
This is for you, Jeff. Michael,
okay.
Devin, Bonnie.
Michael, Devin, and Bonnie. Hint.
Their leader of sorts, Kit.
That would be Knight Rider.
Yeah. A little poetic license there, I think, from
of
John Potts.
Sorts.
I think maybe.
Come on.
Well, Devin would be the leader.
Devin's
but,
the leader.
But I think if you put Kit in the first one, that would be too much of a
yeah. yeah.
Perhaps.
All right. So to Sarah.
Sarah,
Templeton, Bosco Albert, Amy Amanda. Templeton, Bosco Albert, Amy Amanda are your three names.
Hint.
John.
Hint.
Oh, you're going to hate yourself. Templeton,
yep.
Faceman Peck, Bosco
no.
Albert, B.A. Baracus, Amy Amanda, Triple A Adams, John Hannibal Smith.
Uh-huh. That's yep. the A-team.
That's the A-team, soon to be remade.
Sarah will hate this.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Wilma, Elias, Ephraim.
God, hint.
William.
Hint.
Colonel William, Wilma Deering, Dr. Elias Hur, Admiral Ephraim Asimov, subtle, Captain William Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers?
I gotta need the title, though.
In the 24th century?
Oh, so close.
25th?
Yeah, I'll give it to
Damn
you.
Damn it. I'll no, give it no, to no, you. It's I'll okay. Give it to it's you. Okay.
No, no, that's so close.
I don't want your pity
I
points.
Don't expect you to know centuries. Tell you what, Tara, I'll give you the point unless it's like super crucial to the end of the game.
All right, I'm going to write it in ghosty writing on yeah. my score.
Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Thank you. For Jeff.
Yes.
Susan, Michael, and Marcus.
Michael and Marcus. Hint, please.
Their leader, John.
It's always John.
It's always John or yeah. Jim.
John. Everybody follows a John.
Susan, Michael, and Marcus?
Yeah.
And John.
Yeah. Oh, of course, and John. Go ahead and give me a hint.
Susan Ivanova, Michael Garibaldi, Marcus Cole, John Sheraton.
Oh, God, I know this one.
Yeah.
Say them again, just because I want to hear you. I want to
yeah,
hear you
sure.
struggle through
it. Yeah, yeah. Susan Ivanova, Michael Garibaldi, Marcus Cole, John Sheraton.
God, I don't have any idea.
Babylon 5.
Oh,
jeez. I would have guessed the Mod Squad.
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Sarah. I was like, wait, wrong round.
Yeah.
Sarah. Molly, Natalie, and Sean. I'll let you know this is a tough one.
Facts of Life.
Good guess.
Leader is Valerie. The otherwise known as Valerie Irons.
Uh-huh.
And Valerie Irons is the first two letters in VIP.
Oh.
Hey, sure. I'm glad I just went for it with the guess.
Yep.
We're back to Tara?
Yep.
Okay. Oscar, Rudy, and Jamie.
Hint.
Steve.
$6 Million Man.
Two yep. points. Jeff.
Yes.
Kelly, John, and Chris. Chris with a K.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Kelly, John, Chris. Chris with a K.
And now remember, their leader probably isn't also named John.
Yes.
Or is he?
I'm going to take Where's a she? Stab at this, and let's see. It's Kelly, John, and Chris.
Yeah.
Yep.
Charlie's Angels.
Nice.
3 points.
Nice.
Nicely done. Sarah, Jesse, Daisy, Cooter.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
3 points. Tara.
Yeah.
Christine, uh-huh. Mary Beth, Victor.
Hint.
Bert.
Bert.
Yes, my son is also named Bert.
Hint.
All right, get ready for this one, Tara.
Okay.
Christine Cagney.
Uh-huh.
Mary Beth Lacey.
Sure.
Oh.
Victor is Becky.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Lieutenant Bert Samuels.
Cagney and Lacey.
That is good for a point. Back to who? Oh, last track
Jeff.
Where I am. Thank
Jeff.
You. Jeff.
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin. One name. Margaret Walter Eugene. So once again, first name, Benjamin Franklin. Second name, Margaret. Third name, Walter Eugene.
Nash.
That
nice.
Is good. Nicely done.
Nice.
Benjamin Franklin is Hawkeye.
Uh-huh.
Walter Eugene yep. is Radar.
Sure. Yeah. John Potts thought he tricked you, but he did not.
Here's our last question. Our very last question for the Gen X round for Sarah. Dana, Fox, and John.
Dana, Fox?
Yep.
And John. The X-Files.
Yeah.
That's good. Leader Walter. And that was John Doggett from the terrible last season. Thrown in there for good measure.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
All right. Scores have really widened in their gap this round. I have 9. Jeff has 15. Sarah has 17.
Ooh.
The Spread Eagle.
All right.
Of points.
Now we're into the millennial round. So very recent shows.
These are going to all be about Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
John, Cameron, and Derek.
Hint.
Sarah.
Oh, is it Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles?
Yep.
Okay. Oh,
that it is.
Wow.
Nice.
Good pull.
Thank you.
Jeff. Yeah. Lee, Kara, Saul.
Say it one more time.
Lee, Kara, Saul.
Hint.
William is the leader.
Hint.
Lee Adama, Kara Thrace, Saul Tai, William Adama.
So I'm so ashamed of this Battlestar Galactica.
That was nice. Good for a point.
I would have guessed brothers and sisters, so don't worry about it.
Brothers and sisters, not the answer to this question, Sarah. Matt, Tim, and Brian.
Matt,
Tim, Brian.
Brian?
Yep.
Brian. I'm gonna guess.
All right.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
All right.
Nice.
Nicely done, mm-hmm. Tara.
Yeah.
Still not sure who Brian is. Don't care.
Smash.
Brian Smash Williams. Okay. Caitlin, Rob, and Brandon.
Caitlin, Rob, and Brandon. Hint.
Eddard.
Oh.
AKA
shit.
Ed.
Game of Thrones.
2 points.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Danny Kono Chin Ho.
Hawaii 5-0.
Nice.
3 points. This is.
For Sarah.
Oh, of course it is. Christopher Pauly. Do I need to go on?
Nope. The Sopranos.
3 points.
Nice.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
Christopher.
Y'all got 3 questions left.
Okay.
Walter, Paige, and Toby.
Walter, Paige, and Toby. Hint.
Cabe? I can't be over how you say it. C-A-B-E.
Okay.
Maybe
Caleb or Cable? I don't know.
There's no L on it.
Okay,
so.
I still don't know. Hint.
Walter O'Brien, Paige Deneen, Toby Curtis, Cabe Gallo. Now remember, it's something that's
very
recent.
I feel like Walter O'Brien should mean something to me, and yet it doesn't. So
no,
I have nothing.
So. No, you're right not to get this.
Okay.
Scorpion.
Oh. Those fuckers could be named anything.
Yeah, exactly. Computer guy.
Yeah.
Nice lady.
Candle face.
Jeff.
Yes.
Melinda, Grant, and Leo. Melinda, Grant, Leo.
Hint.
Phil. Melinda May, Grant Ward, Leo Fitz, Phil Coulson.
Oh, Agents of Marvel, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Correct. And way to be possessive about it.
Thank you.
It is Marvel's after all.
Yeah.
Sarah, Nick, yep. Catherine, and Warwick.
Oh, CSI.
Which one?
Original,
yeah.
Vegas,
yeah.
One.
He had a bracket there calling it Night Shift. I've never heard it called Night Shift before.
No, I don't think before. It was ever called that. It was just CSI Crime Shift Investigation.
No. I meant as the fan.
Oh.
You know.
Okay.
Like the TOS of, you know, kind of thing. Just never heard it called Night Shift before.
No.
That was interesting.
Who knows what fans do?
Tara?
Yeah.
All right. Anthony, brackets Tony,
uh-huh.
Abby, Tim, or Timothy?
Hint.
Leroy Jethro.
Navally! NCIS. Yeah.
Leroy Jethro Gibbs is
yeah,
the full.
The only Leroy on yeah. television, I believe.
Okay. Jeff.
Yes.
Toby, Josh, Claudia, Jean.
Toby, Josh, Claudia, Jean. Hint.
Leo? Yep.
I don't know about that choice.
No, that works. No.
All right. I mean, I get how he got there, but it's deceptive.
Yeah, I don't know. It works.
The newsroom.
The West Wing. Very
so close.
Very close.
Oh, yeah.
So and Leo is the chief of staff.
I know. I get
and
it.
All those guys are the staff.
Yeah, I get it. I'm just
saying. What, you wanted to be the president? You wanted to be a gimme? You wanted to make this game easy because you're third place? Is that what's happening?
I was trying to get a point for Jeff.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
Cordelia Charles Winifred, a.k.a. Angel. Fred.
Angel.
That is good for 3 points. All right, we got one more question left. Wow. Let's get scores.
Oh, my God. This is a runaway game. Well, not really, actually. Just not for me. I have 15. Jeff has 20. Sarah has 29.
Okay.
Oh, it's a blowout.
This last question is worth 80 points. No. for Tara.
Yes.
Sam, Fiona, and Jesse. Not a lot of Fionas in the world.
No,
on
there
TV.
Aren't, and yet I can't think of one.
Yeah.
Is it Burn Notice? Hey.
That's good.
Nice.
Sam Axe.
Great.
What a great name.
Yep.
Jeff, your last question. Okay. Zoe, Jane, and River.
Zoe, Jane, and River?
And
every
I will
game
let
time.
You know, J-A-Y-N-E, if that helps you any.
He will be in his bunk.
And Zoe's without a Y. And River spelt with three I's and seven Q's.
And some Cyrillic letters.
There's an epsilon in there.
And a two.
Yeah.
Zoe, Jane, and River. I'm going to need a hint.
Malcolm or just Mal.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You're going to get so much email.
I'm going to need the other hint.
All right.
I'm drawing.
Zoe Washburn, Jane Cobb, River Tam, Malcolm Reynolds.
God, I can't come up with it, guys. So
they're gonna murder him.
Yeah, they are.
Firefly.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, last question of the game for Sarah.
Firefly, like Psych, the show that only lives on is a game time answer.
Yeah, seriously.
Rachel, Mercedes, and Finn.
Rachel, Mercedes, and Finn.
Yeah. Two N's.
Shit. Yeah, Finn.
Four F's.
Hint.
Will.
I don't know, Glee?
Hey!
Wow.
Wow.
That was awesome.
All right, let's get the final scores, please.
All right. I have 18 or a ghost 19. Jeff has 20 and Sarah has 31.
Jesus Christ. All right, so that is...
Sarah destroyed.
We're going to make that officially 19 for you, Tara.
Okay.
I am merciful. All right, let's do the shits and giggles. First person to shout this out gets... let's see, there's four names, 4 Dave points.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to read the name slowly. You can guess any time, but once you guess, you have to give everybody else a chance before your next guess.
Okay.
Max. Mike. Don. The leader. Adam. Max, Mike, Don, Adam. Max Greavy, Mike Logan.
Oh, Law and Order!
That's good for 4 Dave points. Oh, well. Sarah, I'm surprised you didn't get that one.
It's hard. That's
but it
a
doesn't
weird
matter.
Lineup.
No, she was too busy celebrating.
Yeah!
Sarah!
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Mr. Jeff Drake, where can people check you out on the web?
There's a little site called previously.tv that I write for. And then also sometimes I had a piece on McSweeney's.net recently. So.
Yes, so good.
That was good.
Thank you.
We'll put that in the show notes.
We'll link it. Yeah, yeah.
All right. And what's going on the site, speaking of previously TV, guys?
We have a lot of new show fact sheets for a lot of the shows that are premiering this week.
Yep.
As previously mentioned, Scream Queens has been big, so please check out Alex's post because it's super funny.
All right. Well, that is it. We jumped into the pile of TV fall shows and raked the offerings for the shows we were most and least into before Liv gave her face-off report and Sarah looked at the OJ offerings on The Blotter Presents. We asked, will Dave hate this on the subjects of Troy, Fall of a City, and the A-Team remake? Jeff made the unsuccessful pitch for Fawlty Towers, The Germans, for inclusion into the Extra Hot Great canon. we crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time, bringing us to, I believe, our first ever three-way tie. Next week, we will crown a victor.
So exciting.
Oh, you're sidelining. We're just going to deal with it. Everybody's a robot now. Remember.
We're listening.
Whoops. Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Oh, everything's falling apart here.
Wrap
at the
it
end.
Up.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Pumpkin Spice.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Rick and Treat.
Oh, Jeff Drake is the robot. Thanks for listening. Jeff Drake's not going to say anything else for the rest of the episode. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grade.
Ring, ring, ring. Believe in yourself, Ben.